Good morning, everyone. Good to see all of you alive this morning. You've been doing something for the past half hour while you've been sitting here that's been keeping you alive. You probably weren't really thinking about it, but all of you were breathing, and you were taking oxygen in, you were letting off carbon dioxide, and that was actually keeping you alive. And the reason I'm mentioning that is because I want you to think about what a fantastic system that is that God came up with. Here's a process that really is very simple, and not a doctor, not a scientist, so I'm going to explain it in really simple terms, and somebody else could probably give you more details, but God had to somehow get oxygen into our entire body. So the plan he came up with was for us to breathe in air, which has oxygen in it, and then it's going to go either through our nose or our mouth. We breathe it in, down through our trachea, ends up in our lungs, where it then passes into the bloodstream. And I'm told that there's about 500 million little sacs inside your lungs, and that's a lot for a small area like that if you think about it. And I believe, if I'm pronouncing this right, they're called alveoli. And they transfer, all right, Russ gives me a thumbs up, so I did a good job. They transfer that oxygen into your bloodstream through some capillaries that are there in your lungs. And that then goes through your entire body, and by kind of a reverse process, the carbon dioxide that you need to get rid of is exhaled out. Now, just think about what an awesome system that is. That's the respiratory system. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because we're going to be looking this morning at something that's equally as awesome, and that's the way God designed our salvation. And that's what we do every Sunday, and it's something that we often don't really want to talk that much about because it can create a lot of conflict, there's a lot of discussion that it can raise, but it's really a beautiful thing, and it's very simple, and it shouldn't be something that we're afraid to talk about. And so I want to look at that this morning. I want to see just how similar that is to some of the other things that God has done that are so simple and yet so efficient and so beautiful. Now, God wants to save everyone. And really, everybody on earth who has ever lived basically could have taken part in salvation if they wanted to. And yet, most people don't want to. And it's really kind of a sad thing because God has set that up in a way that it works for everyone, just like breathing works for everyone. And unless you're sick or something along those lines, you have some kind of an illness where you can't breathe. And I think this was the best plan that could possibly have been imagined. As we go through it this morning, hopefully you'll see just how simple it was and how perfect it is and how well it works out. Now, God has done his part, as I said. He has provided salvation. He's given us the opportunity to get away from the mortality that we have. It's something that maybe we're getting used to being mortal, and we don't really think that often about how nice it would be not to be mortal, to not have all the problems that we have now, to basically not have to breathe, that you could live anyway, that you would live forever no matter what. We might not realize what a wonderful thing God has offered to us. And I want to think about that this morning. Now, if God has offered this to us, God has done what he needs to do, he must require something from us. That just makes sense. He had this plan. He wants to give people the opportunity to live forever, but he's going to want something from people as well. So I want to think about what is it that God wants from us. You know, it's kind of like, here's a gift I'm going to give to you. God says, I want to give you this gift. I want to give this to you. But I would like you to do something in return before I give this gift to you. I would like you to do something. Now, sometimes we might think that it wouldn't work that way. God just gives us things. But really, when somebody gives you something, they usually are going to ask for something from you. You know, even if you were to go home today and you would get a phone call from, like, Publishers Clearing House and they'd say, you've won, they're going to ask you to come and pick up the check or to do something, give you the address they can send it to. They're going to ask something from you. So God has asked something from us as well. So what does God require from us? Well, we could go into all kinds of things this morning, but I'd like to look at three things that God requires from us. I think he requires from us obedience. He requires faith. And last of all, he requires humility. And as we go into the beauty of the plan that God set up for salvation, I think you're going to see how all three of these things fit together. They all work together. Without one, you can't have the other. So let's get started with obedience. Now, Anyone who's read the Bible very much realizes that God wants obedience. You go all the way back to the Garden of Eden. What was it he wanted from Adam and Eve? He wanted obedience. And we noticed in yesterday's reading, you might have noticed this, that Jesus said, if you're my friends, you'll do whatever I command you. So right from the Old Testament into the New Testament, all the way through the Bible, obedience is extremely important. So we've got to attempt to obey God. That's just something we have to do. We have to make an effort to do the things that God wants us to do. Now, you also have to have faith. Faith is almost as important as obedience, maybe just as important as obedience. Why is faith so important? Why can't we just obey God? Think about today's reading. Remember when Jesus was being taken in? They're going to crucify him. And we read that the elders and the chief priests, they were kind of worried about something. I don't know if you noticed that, if you picked it out today's readings. But they were afraid they were going to get defiled. And why were they worried about being defiled? Because they wanted to keep the Passover. And why was that such an important thing to them? Because God commanded them to keep the Passover. Well, they didn't want to miss out on that. So the problem was they didn't have faith, because what ends up happening was that they were so worried about being defiled and missing out on the Passover, they didn't stop to think about why would they be defiled. Because they were doing something wrong, and they weren't having the faith that they were supposed to have. So obedience without faith, if we just do what God wants, no faith behind it, we just do it because, oh, God said to do it, I've got to do it. There's a word for that, and basically what we call that is tradition. So if you're just doing what God wants simply because, well, I heard that's what I'm supposed to do, so I'm going to do that, then really what you're doing is just following tradition. And that's not what God wants. So we want to have obedience, we want to have faith, and then we have to have humility as well. If you have obedience, and you have faith too, and you're missing humility, then you end up with something called arrogance. Because, oh, I'm doing what God wants, and I believe this is what God wants, and I believe God's going to reward me for this. Boy, aren't I a wonderful person? I'm doing exactly what God wants. Now we have arrogance. So if you don't have obedience, and you don't have faith, and you don't have humility all together at the same time, you really don't have what God requires from you. Now here's the really neat part about this, and why I say it's such a neat system. It's very similar to the respiratory system, how it all works together in such a neat way, is that if you don't understand how the obedience part works, you won't have the faith and you won't have the humility. So let's take a look at that this morning. Here's what's so awesome about how God set up in the salvation plan, how these things are going to work together. God tells us, you need to obey me. In fact, you have to obey me. If you don't obey me, you're going to die. And beyond that, you're going to stay dead forever. So God makes that rule. Unfortunately, God says, here's the things you have to do to obey me, and there's a bunch of them in there that we can't do. So basically, it comes down to, you have to obey me, but you can't obey me. And all of a sudden, you're stuck. It's impossible to do what God requires for salvation. There's no point in even trying to. You simply cannot earn salvation because God has set it up where it's physically not possible for you to do that. In fact, God has made it to where we actually have to do what God wants because we love him, not because we're trying to earn salvation, because it's really a waste of time if that's what we're trying to do. And that's beautiful, really, if you think about it. It's a beautiful thing that God has set up for us, because the fact that we can't do what he wants brings on the next thing that we have to do, which is faith. We have to have faith. So in other words, if let's say that God set up a system in which if you come to a meeting on Sunday and you read the Bible every day and you pray before every meal, and if you talk to one person during the week about me, you will, when you're 75 years old, you will become immortal. And so you notice that people did that, and when they're 75, they became immortal. And you would say, wow, I'm going to do the same thing. That would just be, again, that would just be a salvation plan that would work, but it wouldn't work the way God wants it to. It's the fact that we can't comply with what God wants, we can't do it, that makes the other parts work, that makes us humble, and that makes us need to have faith. First of all, we have to have faith that God exists, because we don't see anybody become immortal. If we saw it happen, we wouldn't need any faith. Now, if we simply saw people become immortal, we'd just say, oh, well, then I'm going to do that. And that doesn't require any faith at all. But the fact that we don't see it happen, we've never seen anyone become immortal, makes us need to have faith that it's really going to happen someday. We have to believe, first of all, that God exists, that God will reward us, as it says in Hebrews 11, and that Jesus died and was resurrected. We need to believe all those things. We also need to believe that God forgives us, because the fact that we can't live up to what He asks us to do means that we have to believe that God will forgive us, or otherwise we won't live forever. And we have to believe that someday we will live forever. Otherwise, life is completely pointless. If we're just going through life and doing what God wants, and we believe that this is all we're ever going to get, we're going to be here on Sunday with our brothers and sisters that we love, we're going to get to go to Bible school sometimes, you know, that's going to be it, then really life is relatively pointless. It's better than a lot of people's lives, but it's not really what we're looking for in our life. Next, we have to have humility. Asking for forgiveness requires humility. First of all, you have to admit you're wrong, and that takes a lot of humility. It's not something that we usually like to do. Second, we have to admit that God is right. So we have to say, I'm wrong, God is right, for us to get forgiveness. We have to admit that we can't do it by ourselves. It's not possible for us to. And we have to turn to God for help. And so again, the system that God has set up for our salvation requires that we have humility. And last of all, we have to come to grips with the idea that really, we are the ones that should be on the cross. We're the ones that deserve to be there. That we're the ones who sinned, that Jesus did not sin. And so really, we're the ones who deserve to die. And again, that creates humility in us. And it's very humbling if you think about it. If you admit, not only do I deserve the small things that happened to me, but I actually deserve to die. That's really what, in the end, I should get in life. And admitting that really increases our humility. So now I want to turn and think about what is involved in the death of Jesus that we're remembering this morning. It's very important, I think, that we understand the whole concept. And I work in a mortgage company, so hopefully this won't be like sacrilegious, but I'm going to use the idea of a mortgage because I think it's very similar to what our lives are like. You're probably not aware of this, but there are mortgages that get forgiven. And generally, so you don't get excited about it and think you can go out and get one like that, generally the way it works is somebody, for some unforeseen reason, near the end of their mortgage, they're unable to pay. A good example is a woman who never worked, and her husband has always provided all the money for the mortgage, and he dies, and maybe there's a year left on the mortgage. It's not uncommon for the mortgage company to say, we understand you can't pay it, we're now going to forgive the debt. You no longer owe it. And that's very similar, I think, to what God does for us. God has said, here's the debt you owe. You should die. However, in my goodness, and it's certainly a lot more goodness than a mortgage company has, they're doing it for PR and so on, but God says, in my goodness, while you should die, I'm not going to make you pay that mortgage off. Instead, I am going to cancel it. I'm going to tear it up. Now, it's very important that we understand that because a lot of people believe that what actually happened was somebody walked up and said, you owe $300,000 on your mortgage. I'll pay it for you, which is totally different than a mortgage being forgiven. That's simply, in actual professional terms, that would be changing the note and somebody else is now responsible for the debt. So it's very important that we understand that what God has said is you still owe that debt. No one's paid it off from you, but I'm going to forgive it anyway. Because that will cause us to love God. And that will cause us to be humble. We realize that really we don't deserve it. We should have to pay that debt. Just like if your mortgage company called you up and said, every year we pick out somebody that doesn't have to pay off their mortgage, and you're the lucky winner. And, of course, you're going to have a really good feeling toward that mortgage company. If your uncle called you and said, I've decided to pay off your mortgage, you really wouldn't have a good feeling toward your mortgage company. You'd say, boy, my uncle's a nice guy, but you wouldn't toward the mortgage company itself. And so I think if we understand that, that what God really has done is he has said, you deserve to die, but you're not going to have to, that we'll really have our faith that we need in God, and we'll also be humble at the same time. Now, any looking at the salvation that God has provided for us through his Son without asking the question of why was it necessary for Jesus to die wouldn't be complete. So I want to take a minute to talk about that this morning. Jesus had to die for this plan to work. It's kind of like I've talked about how your lungs work, and you actually have a diaphragm. Everybody's heard of that, and that's what makes your lungs, you know, go in and out, and that's why you breathe, but it's not really. In fact, there's a lot of dead people who have diaphragms and lungs and noses and mouths and all that, and they don't breathe. That's because their brain's no longer working. And so Jesus' death as part of God's plan is just like the brain with our respiratory system. It had to be there. Why, though? Why did Jesus have to die the way he did?
Because he loved us.
Well, that's one of the reasons, but why was that particular method necessary? Why did God require that Jesus die the way he did? And I've thought about that a lot, and I know a lot of the rest of you have, because it seems like a horrible thing to have happen. It's not what we would have requested. We wouldn't say, well, God, I'd like to see your son die. So why did that actually happen? And I think, in thinking about what it's like when you have children, that sometimes words are not enough, and you just have to have a picture, and you have to show them what it's all about. And I think with us, I think the deal with the system having that God created, having to have Jesus die the way he did, is because of our limitations. That had Jesus not gone through that, we wouldn't have been able to acquire the faith that we need and the humility that we need. We had to see in graphic portrayal what sin is really all about. And I think that is why it was necessary. So, we've talked about the way we breathe. We've talked about God's salvation. And I want you to think now about how fantastic it is that you're breathing. It's really a good thing. But at the same time, I want you to think about how fantastic it is, the salvation that God set up through his Son, that it creates in us the need for obedience. It creates faith. And most of all, because of the way it was done, and because of what happened, it creates humility.